Are board games the social lubricant for the loneliest generation? Screen-free play has been all the craze, and it's bringing many of us together. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the growth in the tabletop gaming industry and offer suggestions for games to try are YattaQuest co-owner Matthew Fay and Victory Pints owner Riley Mullins. Thanks so much for being here, Matthew and Riley.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's a pleasure, yeah.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Well, let's start with you, Matthew. What are your earliest memories of board games or of your first board game? What got you hooked on board games? And you'll need to scoot a little bit closer to the microphone.
Board games were always an integral part of our family. We grew up, every family holiday would be a bunch of board games on the tables as everybody was helping make dinner. My dad grew up playing Dungeons and Dragons, came back in the Navy, and that was just, it was part of our family event. Every Saturday night, we played the big D&D family game, and it was just a great way of keeping us together and spending time together. So it was, Risk and Axis and Allies, a big strategy, and Magic the Gathering, D&D, things like that.
Yeah, so you weren't playing Candyland. This was the intense stuff.
My dad read The Hobbit to us all growing up, and so we were a really heavy reading family, and we were ready to dive in.
That's great. What about you, Riley? What are your earliest memories? When did you get hooked on board games?
Nice. Yeah, I love that question, because so many of the folks that come to Victory Pints as well share similar stories. So much of the board game explosion, has been the past 10 to 20 years. So most of us grew up with, like some of you things you guys were saying, the classics, Scrabble, Risk, Monopoly, Sorry, some of those things, Magic, Dungeons and Dragons, all of that stuff missed me my entire life until recently. But we grew up playing the classics, and that was just a regular part of what we did as a family. But it wasn't really until college that somebody's kind of roped me into playing what a lot of folks would call a gateway game, Catan, Settlers of Catan, or Catan, and just made some awesome memories with friends, and started getting more interested in some of those heavier thematic shared experiences together, and kind of took off from there. But yeah, grew up like so many other people, just playing the classics that we've all known for so long.
Well, Riley, let's talk a little bit more about the game Settlers of Catan. Catan, I imagine there's a lot of debate over the best way to say that. Why was it such a game changer to you, pun intended?
Yeah, so I think, I guess I'll say Catan. I think the guy who published it, I believe, died within the past couple of years, and I think he, officially said Catan, so I don't know.
Okay,
I guess
we'll
stick say
with
Catan.
That.
But you can call it whatever you want. So that, and a lot of games like it, if people have heard of things like Ticket to Ride or Pandemic or Carcassonne, even things now like Splendor, all those games fall into a category that a lot of people would say these are gateway games, meaning, hey, maybe you haven't heard about them. Maybe they've come out in the past 10 or 20 or maybe even 30 years, but they've just flown under the radar for a lot of people. And when people start to learn about or explore kind of this wide new world of board games, a lot of times those are the titles that are the gateway to introduce people to, hey, there's all this other crazy stuff we didn't grow up with and we've maybe never seen or heard about, and that isn't necessarily on the shelf at Target or Walmart or whatever. And so those are just super accessible. They're tried and true. Most of those quote gateway games have been around a while, and they even to this day are some of the most played games here at Victory Pints and are still very popular. They aren't overly complex. And so they've just been the avenue, the bridge, the gateway for so many people to begin to explore the craziness that is the board game explosion the past 10 or 20 years.
Matthew, talk a little bit about what makes Catan different. I mean, there are so many board games that have been around a lot longer than that game, but why does it kind of get people hooked in a different way?
I think what the big thing about Catan is this, that it has this great element of player interaction where we're trading resources. You can kind of cut people off and create, some arch enemies and some trade partners, in a sense, as somebody gets ahead in the game. And it gives you clear defined goals of how to achieve victory points. And no one gets eliminated throughout the game, which is a lot different than most American board games. And so that makes it a great where you're playing towards the end of the game, and then you get some kind of almost secret reveals with comeback mechanics. And so it just kind of like scratches all of these different parts of the brain of like, you get a little bit of dice rolling in there, a little bit of collecting cards. And so it just makes everybody a little bit happy. And so the only downside I would say to Catan is that it's usually an investment. It's about 2 hours long. And so and because of that, though, it creates really rewarding memories and stories about sheep and wood and mud somehow, but that it creates those immediate bonds with each other, you know. And that's why it really changed a lot of, got really big in America, and it changed a lot of Americans' concepts of board games, because it introduced all these new ideas and mechanics to stuff we had no clue. So.
We're talking about the power of board games to bring people together and create memories. What's your favorite board game? Is there a game you've been wanting to try but you have questions about? We've got some experts here. Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Okay, so for some of us growing up, not necessarily including myself, but board games were that thing you did when you were bored or it was raining or there was nothing better to do. Matthew, for you, when did board games become more than that? Were they ever that for you, or were you automatically hooked from a young age?
I would say for our family, we were automatically hooked from a young age. However, at the store, YachtaQuest has been around since 2004. So we've really seen the huge growth multiple times in the industry as board games have changed in the cultural, you know, eye of things to do more than just that rainstormy day. You know, they grew from this tiny niche activity to something that's just normalized and encouraged. And so for us, even at the store when we first opened YachtaQuest, I don't think we'd ever played Settlers. I think Catan. I think somebody asked us on the phone for it, and our policy was if somebody asked for it, then we were going to try to bring it in. And you know, so we were like, oh great, what is this board game? You know, and so that's how we discovered a lot of games, this customer request, and bringing them in, trying them out, and it was a great exploration into that, because we just came from more of a strategy and role playing and storytelling, you know, family. And so then that really exploded into a new discovery of board games in 2004 when we first opened YachtaQuest.
Oh, wow. How about for you, Riley? When you said you didn't really get into board games the same way you are now until I think you said college, but as a kid, was it something that was an activity of later resort? I don't want to say last resort, but that if you couldn't go out and ride bikes or whatever, when did it really become the focus instead of the runner up?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think my story is probably not too dissimilar from a lot of folks that come in here, where it wasn't the first point of interest or thing on the list that like, oh, we got spare time, let's get a game out, let's do that. I think that was a secondary, if not tertiary option, simply because what we knew about and what existed back then is nowhere near, you know, what exists today. Or certainly we didn't roll in the circles that knew those things, you know, or had access to. So it would all have been just over our heads and a surprise to even know what existed beyond, you know, what's on the shelf at Target. But I think that it became, you know, the main point of interest, and oh man, we got time. Like, I don't really want to do anything else but hang out with folks and play a game. When in college, it kind of snowballed because, as Matt was saying, like the memories, the experiences, that kind of screenless recreation, that face-to-face shared experience. Games are very tactile. Of course, there's pieces and cards and things you're doing. And you're sitting across from each other, and it doesn't matter if it's, you know, like role-playing stuff where you're doing cooperative storytelling, or if you're playing a very competitive game, or it's a super silly casual game or cooperative game, whatever it is that you're doing, that is serving the relationship with whoever you're sitting down with at the table, I think in a unique way that a lot of things don't necessarily do. I mean, it's always fun to go to a concert or a movie or an amusement park or whatever with other people. But when you're sitting down at the table together, face to face, immersing yourself, it could be something super thematic. Maybe it's a Lord of the Rings game or a game that's just like the movie Aliens, you know. But those types of experiences give so much substance to the relationships. And that's really what it's always been about, is the opportunity to invest in the relationships that you have, because those are, anytime we go someplace, you know, we're going to eat, we're going to talk, we're going to do that everywhere we go, wherever we are. But when you add in a factor like board games, that's an entirely extra piece of substance for your relationship to work with. And that always creates memories and funny inside jokes and all of that stuff. And so that's when it became the main point of interest for me, was just like, I want that. I want to do that with my friends right now.
Well, and that became harder to do during the pandemic and the lockdown, when we were all socially isolating and we were, you know, having to do more stuff on Zoom and video. And Matthew, how did that affect your approach to gaming? I mean, there was a time when you couldn't get together with all your friends in the same way as you had been theoretically. So was that tough for you, for a lot of your customers, when they were missing that?
Yeah, that was a huge change, you know, for everyone. And that we went from a time where we were really focused on in-store events and in-store play, and we transitioned into encouraging and celebrating the play at home. And, you know, that was the perfect opportunity to remind every family that in times of difficulty, the community that you have at home needs to be as strong as possible. And when you, Riley kind of mentioned, when was touching on, when you play games with people, you're exercising the foundations of trust. We're going to both agree to play by the rules and follow this. And the goal for both of us is, no matter to win or lose, the goal for everyone involved is to have fun. And I think that is why we saw such a huge boom, actually, for board gaming, even though I would have thought it would have been an extremely difficult time in some ways it was, you saw so many families who needed that, you know, who wanted that. And so it was such a great opportunity to spread the joy in a time where there wasn't really much joy. And I really think that now, in the continuing growth of that, is the reverberations of that event, basically.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, we are going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will talk about the best and worst of board games. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the power of board games to bring people together and create memories. My guests are YottaQuest co-owner Matthew Fay and Victory Pints owner Riley Mullins. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Okay, we promised we were going to talk about the best board games. Matthew, this is probably like picking your favorite child or pet or something. This is very difficult. What are your favorites?
I would start with Suro. It's one of my favorite games. I think it goes into every closet. It's 2 to 8 players, so it can run the whole, you know, any
Suro, how do you spell that?
That's spelled T-S-U-R-O, Game of the Path, I think is the full name. But it's great. It takes 5 to 15 minutes. It's like Snake meets Mario Kart. The goal is to stay on the board as long as possible and not run into each other and not fall off the board. It's at 2 players. It's a little slow and competitive. You can plan ahead a few moves, but it's a great game for big groups as well, because you add players, it gets more chaotic and unpredictable. And it has got like a player elimination. Once somebody falls off the board, they're out of the game. But by the time they go get a drink and come back, we're ready to start the next game.
Oh, so, it's fast.
Great one for that. So that's my go-to recommendation. If you walk into YottaQuest and you haven't, you know, you're looking, haven't heard of board games, that's going to be my first one to go to always. So.
Wow, that was so fast. You picked a favorite so quickly. I'm impressed. Riley, what about you? What's your favorite board game? What do you think's the best one? Are you with us, Riley? Did we lose you?
So sorry. I think my audio was cut there for a second. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we sure can now.
Sorry about that. It's always so interesting even beginning to talk about that with any person, because it's always such a dialogue. There are so many questions, like, what is it a person is interested in? Why do they like games? Is it the art? Is it the casualness? Is it the brilliance of how the game's designed? All of those things. So there are so many games out there, I mean, certainly at this point, that when folks come into Victory Pints, it's always a conversation about, like, hey, what are, you know, what's on the docket today? What kind of experience are we looking to have? Is this like casual? Let's laugh, let's have fun, let's make fun of each other and have a good time. Or is this like somebody needs to pay the price and we got to be super competitive? But for me, and I tend to gravitate towards heavier thematic games. There's a lot of IP or licensed things that I'm kind of nerdy about, or like a lot of Lord of the Rings stuff or Marvel stuff or Star Wars stuff. There's a new Disney card game the past year or two that's been really popular. And so I definitely invest a lot of time and energy into experiencing those, because those ongoing games that have kind of a community of people that are coming together to regularly play is always fun and immersive for me. But even last night, I just played with a group that was here, a game that's called Just One. It's like by far the most played, most sold game here. It's just a casual cooperative word game. It was up for Game of the Year five or six years ago, maybe, but everybody just writes down a clue to try to get a person to guess one word. And then before you show that person the clues that everybody wrote, they have to show each other their clues. So if you wrote something similar or the same, you got to cancel them out. The person guessing just gets to see what's left, and then they get one guess to guess the one word. And inevitably, it just leads to moments of like, oh, you thought that was a good clue, you're a moron. and literally anybody that's been here or I've talked to about this game has heard me say exactly that. We probably explain that 30 seconds 10 times a day in here. But it just creates that, those fun shared experiences. So Just One has always been one of my favorites for sure. And that's the most played game in here, at least twice as much as any other specific game.
Wow. We got an email from Nancy. Nancy writes, could the panel address the game Lie Detector? That was one of my favorite board games, even better than Clue. It teaches logic and remembering that a no answer is as valuable as a yes answer leading up to discovering the criminal. Why did this game go out of circulation? I've seen it only on eBay. It's much faster paced than Clue and builds our memory and logic skills. I loved it in the 1960s. Lie Detector was set up with punch cards. One card was drawn face down and put into a machine that had various characteristics. Each player will ask a question, and we would use a stylus to punch the mystery card in the little machine. The criminals had various characteristics we were trying to sleuth. It was great fun and stimulating to the mind. Are either of you familiar with this Lie Detector game?
I think I've seen an old box, but the thing is board games are like periodicals. They are more like magazines and stuff that they're not quite typically timeless classics in most modern sense. It's this that they make it, you know, and then that's it. If it doesn't has to really hit a huge inertia for it to really power through, especially back then and even more so nowadays in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of that one, Riley? Or played it?
So I haven't heard of it. I'm looking it up right now. I feel like I've stumbled across a few of these boxes. I mean, I can't even tell how many times it's been reprinted or the artwork redone or, you know, changed hands of who owns it. Possibly, it seems like. I mean, it looks like a great fun game.
Yeah.
But I've never played that one, unfortunately. I'm sorry, Nancy.
Oh, well, thanks for that.
But that's...
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Riley.
I was going to say that's not surprising at all, because literally, I mean, you know, Matt and them have been open 20 years. We've only been open just over 3 years, but still in those, you know, 1,000+ days, there is not a, without, you know, without exaggerating, there's not a single day that at least, you know, somebody asks about or tells us about or brings in at least one game, if not more, that we've never seen, we've never heard of. It's crazy. So there's just so much stuff, you know, retro or kind of old school stuff that's maybe gone through all sorts of revisions and publishings, or new stuff that's like we've never heard of. So it's a crazy time.
Yeah. Well, you can join the conversation. We're talking about board games. Call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Okay, Nancy mentioned Clue. Matthew, what's your take on Clue? Do you love it or hate it? Is it a classic that stands the test of time or a waste of cardboard that was turned into a movie and a Broadway play?
The movie's great.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
no, Clue's great. You know, that I was going to comment, like, those deductive games are another whole aspect of the game that is... It can be tapped into that most people don't even realize, you know, that Nancy had a great experience with this other lie detector game. And there's some other really great deduction style games where you're either collaboratively working together to figure out who did it, you know, and less of a moving around the board way like Clue is, but more of a actually investigating and discovering clues, either looking at news, you know, fake newspapers and game bits, or collecting different, you know, clues and stuff. While there's also some type of investigative detective games where somebody is secretly working against the group, and
those are
another huge hit. You know, a very famous one is the Are You a Werewolf and some other. Good titles, but that's what I would say is that's more the clue is like, this is what this could be, and you know, and once when, after that there's so much more to discover. That's really what the thing with all those early games is, you're just getting just the taste, and then you've got the whole wide world waiting for you.
Yeah, that's one of my nephews likes those somebody in the group is a traitor kind of games. Those are ones we tend to play. What's your take on Clue, Riley?
Yeah, I think a lot of what Matt was saying makes a lot of sense. It's interesting for so many of the classic games that they really, when people make published games now, and when we talk about games or try to describe games to people, there's most of the times we're saying, well, it's kind of like this, or it has this aspect to it, or imagine Clue, but this. And so Clue still gets played in here all the time. You know, it's fun. A lot of people love it. You can pop it open, and most people are familiar enough to just like, hey, we're sitting down for a casual experience. But if they say, we like the idea of what Clue is, but we want to take it to the next level, then there's a lot of options. So it's not like those games are a waste or anything like that. Like, we never want to detract from, look down upon, or anything like that. Really, any game. Though, you know, objectively, there might be some things to critique about games for sure. But they all have an audience. They all have their place. And they've all helped... other games, you know, learn from them and create things that, you know, maybe have taken things to the next level. I feel like when he was describing something, he was talking about Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, maybe, but which is just an unbelievably immersive thematic game. It's like Clue to, you know, some people would be like, oh, this is what Clue always should have been. And it's, you know, in a sense, yes, maybe if that's what you're looking for, but there's also still nothing wrong with Clue. So,
yeah. We got an email from Lori. Lori writes, I heard recently about some games in which players cooperate to fight climate change. Sounds like a great way to help people understand this and perhaps be motivated to work for solutions to our crisis. Our family enjoys Wingspan, such a beautiful game and a fun way to learn about birds. I hear they have a new game about fish. You are nodding your head, Matthew. Are you familiar with the kind of games Lori's talking
absolutely.
About?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Daybreak, I think, is the one that's about climate change, if I remember right. It's actually made with all recyclable bits and, you know, it's not shrink wrap to, you know, reduce waste. And, Wingspan is a beautiful gateway game. You know, as Riley mentioned earlier, these are these new games that are really taking people into the board game hobby. Wingspan starts off really simple and easy and then gets slowly complicated, a little bit more complicated each turn. So it triggers that thing of like, oh, by the end of the game, you got all these things happening, but you understood each step as it went. So it takes you into that great. And a lot of them use, their settings of nature, and they're based off the scientific, like either proofs and things behind it. So you can really get, you know, all this multi-tiered learning.
yeah. Well, we have a question from our technical director today, Ella Rowan. Ella writes, I get very overwhelmed trying to learn the rules of board games. What game would you suggest for someone like me? I'm going to throw that to you, Matthew. Do you hear that in the store?
Flux is a great little card game that the rules are simple, that they just start, you draw one card and you play one card. And then they change from there a little bit, but it's a party game. It's a fun little one, and it's a great introduction into board game rules and stuff. So besides having that one friend who's always there to explain the rules.
The one friend.
Yep. This is a great way to kind of start learning
board game
rules and a fun, you know, party card game.
Yeah. So Flux, that's good. Now, there are people who are very board game averse. So what are some games to avoid? Our producer, Selena Reeder, suggested that maybe Eldritch Horror falls into that category. She said she tried to play it and literally spent 2 hours trying to understand the rules and explain it. Riley, is that one that you sick on people if you've got a slow night in the bar and you really want them to drink a lot?
Well, certainly it's never like that. It is all about crafting the experience for guests that
yes,
come
I'm
in.
Yes, I'm sorry. I was just
and part
teasing.
Of that. I know. That is funny, though. I don't think I would really sic that game on any group that wasn't looking for it. That's not necessarily one to easily recommend unless somebody, you know, is kind of aware about it, knows what they're getting into. And a lot of folks that come here, they may literally have no idea what's in the games, you know, how big the rule book is, all that stuff. And they'll pull something off the shelf. They'll bring it to their table. 5 minutes later, they're taking it back because they're like, okay, we opened that rule book and that's too much for today. So a lot of people do, you know, that are wanting to explore more games and bigger games and stuff like that. They do a little bit of prep work oftentimes where, you know, somebody watched a 3-minute video or we sent a link to our friends of the PDF of the rules and everybody just kind of skimmed over it to see like, is this something we want to take on and learn together today? Or like Matt was saying, you know, that one friend, somebody's learned it, they can teach people, you know, that typically goes smooth. But when a group of, you know, 4 to 6 people sit down and nobody's played the game at a big game, very rarely does that see itself all the way through because there's that awkward sitting at the table for hours, somebody's reading the rules, pointing at things, and people are losing interest and all that. That doesn't happen a ton unless people are choosing, you know, to go in for that and they know what they're getting into. But so Eldritch Horror, you know, would be a good example of one like, let's know what we're getting into and decide like, yeah, we're going for that one. But I wouldn't recommend that to just an average group of anybody that walks in.
Yeah. Okay, Matthew, what do you think is the worst board game and why is the answer Monopoly?
It was designed
oh
that way.
Yeah. 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 Oh, yeah. My gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Definitely Monopoly.
Really? Do you steer people away? I mean, do you ever have people come into the store looking for Monopoly? It feels
it's
like everyone.
A novelty.
Oh,
version,
yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah, Cat Monopoly. I have that one.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're, Cat-opoly.
You know, Cat Monopoly.
Healthy Monopoly we used to sell when we were in there. You yeah. Know, it's But yeah, it was designed to be a terrible game, and that's the point. Yeah, so they did a good job.
Good job, Monopoly yeah. designers. Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah. Do you ever suggest Monopoly to people, Matthew, or you like people more than that?
Yeah, I mean, there is a Monopoly. When you walk through my front door, it's going to be exactly to the left. There's a little classic section of great, you know, games so that way you'll recognize stuff. If you're first time in, there's, you know, Monopoly, Boggle, Scrabble, you know, Trivial Pursuit, all those great, you know, titles that we all grew up in love with. But it's literally just the first foot into a literal wonderland of games. And so it's like, you know, in the middle of a fine dining restaurant, do you just offer plain white bread or do you go go for something else? You know, I mean, there's just so many great options.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some board games that offer strategy but also have some humor, don't require a huge time commitment? Matt, our producer Selena suggested is Munchkin maybe one of those?
Munchkin is almost the one I would have said is one of my least favorite games.
Really? Ooh, controversial.
Controversial, yes,
okay.
It is. Yeah.
Okay. Whoa.
Munchkin is great for those player dynamics. It has a lot of, like, it's a stab your buddy game, as it says
Ooh.
On the box, you know, but it also can drag on very long, and it's just, it has a lot of stuff to remember and going on. So, you know, I would, you know, tone it down, you know, depending on how many people are in the group. It might be something easier, like Carcassonne, where you're just playing simple tiles and you got a little bit of you can cut somebody out of the way or something like that. But yeah, my take on Munchkin is a little controversial.
A little different. Okay. Well, Riley, I'm going to ask you this and ask you to stick close to your computer. You're breaking up a little bit for us before.
Am I breaking up? I'm so sorry.
That's okay. So I understand local board game designers sometimes come to your bar and test out the games they're designing. Can you tell us about that just in a minute or so?
Yeah, so we definitely love partnering as much as we can with local folks, you know, whether it's the beer, the coffee, some of the treats, obviously game designers. You know, we have some local game designers that we have their published products here for sale, and we're always excited about that. And so on our Discord channel, I didn't even really know what Discord was until we started Victory Pints, but, you know, it's a social media kind of multi-thread channel where folks can post about all sorts of things. So one of the threads in there is for local designers and playtesting. And a lot of people in the board game community love to see things early, love to get their hands on stuff, certainly love to give their opinions, critique, feedback. And that's exactly what game designers need, is to get their game in front of people to see what they think and all of that. And so, you know, we always welcome folks to reach out to us if they want to set something like that up. Okay. Because we love to see them, you know, go the distance with their games, because that's hard.
That's great. Well, I've been talking with Yada Quest co-owner Matthew Fay and Victory Pints owner Riley Mullins. Thank you both so much for your time today. It's been lots of fun.
Thank you. Yep, lots of fun.
Yeah, good stuff. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Technical director today is Ella Rowan. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening. And Monopoly, please don't come after me.